snap. Welcome back to another episode of the Youth Ministry Booster Podcast. My name is Zach Work. I'm hanging out in the garage with my best friend,
Chad Higgins,
to talk to you today about how'd your Easter go, Chad? Did you have a good Easter?
It was great. So that's what I wanted to talk about.
Okay. We're starting.
So growing up, I remember vividly. Going back after Easter, right? Back in the day, I don't know if some schools still do it. You get Friday off and then you come back. And I remember we had some sort of like writing prompt. This was like third or fourth grade. And it was, what did the Easter Bunny bring you?
Okay.
I went to public school, not Christian school, but for whatever reason, that was like an appropriate topic.
It's the reason for the season. Yeah.
And I just remember going, wait, hold on. You folks are getting gifts?
Oh,
my family didn't up until that point.
No.
I went home and laid the guilt on old mom.
Yeah,
you know, I'm like,
let's give it up for old mom.
Hold on now, we're only getting Christmas gifts here.
Easter presents?
Did you get Easter presents?
Always.
What did you get?
Always. What did I get? So vividly, I remember Easter was the basket. I assume everybody that's listening knows there's no Easter bunny. Did we ruin that for
I'll ruin it right now. If you're a youth pastor and you still believe in the Easter bunny,
you get out.
Get out.
No, I remember Easter all week. We got like spring gifts. So
what's
like
a spring, like a sprinkler?
Just yard work. Just stuff to do.
That is a bag of fertilizer.
Just stuff to do. So we always get like little Lego sets and chocolate. It was always like, it was like a stocking at Christmas, but Easter. But there was like a season of my life where I was really into golf. And so there was three or four years where like 1 year I got like a nice glove and a sleeve of balls. Like it was like, I don't know, I was like 11 and I got like a golf glove and a sleeve of Titleist. There was 1 year I was really into Tiger Woods, like a Tiger like windsock head cover.
Yeah.
And maybe like, I don't know, I mean, a new putter, but a new putter for a 13-year-old is like a $20 putter or whatever.
Right.
It was like whatever. There was 1 year though, I remember getting in trouble because I found the Easter gift in the attic. And it was a trolley, like a pull behind for your golf bag or whatever.
Golly.
That was the thing that Dad got, or the Easter Bunny got that year, and I found it too soon. I remember him being mad and being like, well, I guess that's ruined. I was like, I mean, it's utility, but I don't know if it's ruined.
Should have hid the gifts better.
I go to the attic all the time.
Yeah, that was just foreign to me. Like,
no little gifties, like Lego set, candy, no candy.
We had it, and bro, there was that whole concept, like for our house, like we just didn't do it.
Did you Easter egg hunt?
We Easter egg hunt.
Okay.
And so that's the thing that I was confused about.
For cash and prizes or candy?
Just candy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Dude, that was like loose change-a-thon. I'd go home with a sack full of nickels.
Well, and most of the time it was like we would dye the eggs and mom would just hide them around the house.
Oh, you hide real eggs, not plastic eggs.
Yeah.
Okay. Old school. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were rocking
a little pasta dye kit set.
Yeah. Every once in a while you lose an egg, you know? come June.
Woo!
It is.
Yeah.
No.
This elm tree smells just awful.
Yeah. No. So, yeah, I remember going home because I remember there was this one kid that was like all upset because he was like, I just got jeans. And I was like, what do you
mean? I love jeans.
Because at first I was really confused because all I understood it was like finding the eggs.
Oh, and so
I was like, this dude found jeans and an egg. How big was this egg? And then it was like, wait, you don't wake up and there's like a basket beside your bag. Yeah. And I was like, Where's this basket come from, right?
Because
we're hunting Easter eggs in like an old Walmart sack. And so
the blue ones, right?
Yeah.
That's how you know.
I just remember being really confused. But after that conversation, you know, parents really stepped it up. We got some decent, you know.
Like, you lay down the law, let old mom know.
I was like, what is this? How come there's a fictional character that brings gifts that we didn't know about?
Now, hold on. Apparently, I'm out of the loop this year, so time has passed. We have several families that were doing leprechaun gifts on St. Patrick's Day.
You can't be doing that.
guys, we can't. Like, just because you can imagine a character for a holiday doesn't mean they get to deliver a gift to your kids.
Now, hold on, though.
But Arbor Day, just a tree showing up.
Here's what I'm for.
Yeah, Flag Day. Yeah,
the groundhog. If the groundhog brings the exact gift
every year,
same gift,
it. Whatever it is, he locks you into it for life or whatever.
You always get
like,
that.
I have 47 alarm clocks. Like he just that's what he brings. They're all Seikos. They're nice. I just didn't need them. Okay, I didn't need them. Yeah. I don't know. Easter bags. Okay, so do clothes? New Easter clothes? That was always a big thing in the working house. No. Is that we'd always get like some kind of new like button down, like seersucker pastel shirt.
Wow,
that was just a thing. I mean, it was like JCPenney, but it was like we had Easter clothes, and we legitimately would have a new shirt to wear on Easter. As we got older, I was really a sucker for like the pastel pants. Yeah. That was like a whole phase. I had some green and salmon pants that I, looking back, wore too often.
I think of salmon pants. That's a one. It's a one-time wear.
That's a one-time wear. It's a one-use, disposable.
Once you've worn salmon pants, if you haven't come to the conclusion of I shouldn't wear salmon pants,
we put them on, we took them out, and we rethought that process.
Here's the deal, though. I am realizing now that I say it, I have very different feelings about salmon shorts than I do pants.
But so, no offense, I've seen you in salmon shorts.
I feel okay with salmon shorts.
Okay.
I feel like salmon calf covering is too much.
It's just that's like a leather vest.
That's
leather jacket.
A line. Yeah, that's a line that I'm
you can't have salmon to the ankles, right?
So like,
salmon to the knees? Yes.
It's fine.
Salmon to the ankles? No, not having it.
Right. It's, okay. I think it's too much salmon.
It's too much. It's a ratio thing. So maybe a little like if it was a little ombre, if it was like a little gradient.
I just feel like that's a lot of salmon balance out somewhere else.
It's a seasonal wear. It's not. It's like
because you can't go.
It's like white pants after Memorial Day. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm not wearing white pants anytime.
I would love it if you did. Just preaching his white. Preaching white.
There's too much risk in white pants.
I'm a messy eater, so I don't know if that's like the right idea. Mm. But yeah, Easter clothes. Okay, here's a question. Maybe controversial for our audience. Was your family like pro hat during Easter? Like, was dad or mom busting out a hat during the Easter service?
Like one of those big,
not necessarily
hats?
A big one, but just like it was like I had cousins that like wouldn't wear a fedora all year long, but like on Easter Sunday,
no,
that was the time. Not a shot at all. Okay,
no, I can't ever imagine.
I just imagine 51 Sundays out of the year. No, but Easter Sunday, you're like, how you do? That's your straw hat fedora.
I feel like if I rock one of those, you know, from The Office, Vacation Stanley.
Vacation Stanley's everybody's favorite Stanley.
I feel like there would be much resemblance for me.
Go ahead and wrap this sermon up, Pastor. I'm about to go somewhere.
Got to get to the lake.
I got a flight to catch. Golly. You know, it's a thing. So hopefully, if you're listening, you had a great Easter. We'd love to hear about it. Send us a comment. Because right around the corner after Easter, it's kind of all eyes to summer and student ministry. And that's really where we wanted to jump off today is to jump into the place, not into the fishing boat after the Easter sermon, but into the feels that come with summer. I know a lot of folks like camp signups are happening, camp planning is happening. At this point, you're like looking down at like what all the contour of summer is going to be. You're planning your rest probably of like, I'm going to hit it heavy 3 weeks, then take 3 weeks to rest, or it's like the every other. I'm not sure what's better, to like front load and then rest, or like to stagger, or to like load up at the end. We have friends that have kind of done all three. I don't know. We'll see what your summer looks like this summer. But for a lot of folks, summer is peak hype, right? Mm-hmm. It is the promise of the most fun, the most exciting, the most lit fam moment that a lot of people could have. And I wonder sometimes if that itself is not a little bit limiting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. One of the things that we wanted to chat a little bit about today is even beyond, I think, camp is how do we minister in all emotions, if that makes sense?
The range of feelings that comes with being a teenager.
Because for student ministry, that's really, really true. And I think that it's really easy to always want to bend towards the happy, exciting.
It's a fun sell. It's a fun sell.
Right.
Hey, camp's going to be the most mediocre week of your life. It's a hard sell. Yeah.
Well, but I'm talking about like even – normal Wednesday, right? Yeah. Like a lot of times, a lot of our messages, and rightfully so, like are hope filled and all these kind of things, right? And it's exciting. We play big music, all that kind of stuff. Game,
yeah.
But there are real things that are happening in students' lives
that are not upbeat, joyous, or exciting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I know that it's not true for everybody in the room at all the times. Yeah. And I'm not advocating for creating this like cry emotional thing,
yeah.
But I think creating
this is sad Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. It's just going to be somber. But I think that there is space that we need to think about in a given year of creating opportunities for students to not even necessarily to deal with the emotion in the room at the time,
yeah.
But giving them tools to deal with,
yeah.
Sadness, grief, right?
Yeah.
Like many things that like so much of scripture
addresses.
Yep. Like
yeah.
So much of the scripture.
Spoiler alert, a lot of sad things happen in the Bible. Yeah. A lot of painful things happen in the Bible, and we don't often talk about them enough.
Right. It's like, it feels like we give people tools to deal with the mountaintop.
Yes. Yeah.
And not as many tools to deal with the valleys.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that, again, we've talked about it before. I'm a huge fan of camp because of the multi-day, multi-meal time. There's a community that happens across the course of 4 to 5 days that you can't do in 2 to 4 hours, yeah. Because some of the guards come down.
Sure.
And I think that's a really important thing to know and to name, is that some students are going to be allowed to feel things that are not just at the surface, but a little bit below.
Yeah.
We talked about it pre-show, like this is sometimes the reason we have a cry night. We don't necessarily want to plan a cry night, but after 3 or 4 days of maybe not drinking as much soda, maybe not as much like escapism, like we're being like in the moment, relational, asking questions, maybe even confronting some of our own feelings, some of the stuff that was buried down may bubble up. And for some students who are carrying around a lot of grief or frustration or sadness, that may look like tears. And that's okay. Yeah. I think some of it is knowing that it's okay and preparing our leaders, having tools for them. So it's not just like, let's get it out. You know, yeah. get them tears out. But just like, why are you feeling this way? Are there other things related to this? It is the like, let's get you a little bit of water, a little bit of food, and let's talk through it. Mm. But I think for a lot of students, like, camp is fun and exciting because it's adventure. It's somewhere else. It's something new. And yet that relocation, that commitment, that community may be alternative for how they deal with their pain, mm-hmm. as much as they deal with their like their fun and enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to plan it all out.
Yeah. I think it's damaging when there's manipulation of the students' emotions.
We're going to twist them into it.
We're going to twist them into it. Man, we're going to.
Don't you miss your mom? Kids camp is the worst. Like that is the very few times that I've ever like not cornered, but like talked to like a camp pastor, like post sermon have always been kids camp where it was like, you knew what you were doing.
Sure.
You knew what you were doing. But yeah.
But I also think that the other way is also as damaging, the like squelching of like, hey, we're afraid that these kids may get emotional, so we're just not going to do
steamrolling through.
Yeah. We're not going to do anything at all. And I think there's a little bit to that that's like we're not allowing students to experience God in the variety of the emotions that he's given them.
Yep.
Right? And I think we've got to be careful. There's some wisdom in that for us of how to do it. Like I'm never a proponent of the mic is open for anyone to share.
What would you like to share, Miranda? Right. Nope. Let's screen those calls. Yeah. Right.
But I think that creating a space to where students are able to engage in a way that is not just, hey, we're going to play 5 really hype songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But we're going to take some time knowing that the subject matter that we're talking about is heavy.
Yeah.
And so we want to give students the opportunity to pray. And we want to talk through like, hey, if you need to talk to a leader in this opportunity, like here are the steps that we can begin to take that I think are really, really healthy for a student to realize like, oh, okay, like this last season of my life has been really rough. That doesn't mean that God has left me.
Well, and that's where I think for a lot of students, like camp being a fun time isn't the goal, the good time or what it needs to be. And that maybe that's even on your Sunday or Wednesday, like sermon series, like summer is a breathing space for they're out of the routine of school in a lot of ways. And so just because they didn't have like the fun time didn't mean they have a good time. And I think I've seen too many rec fields where like, it was like, we need you to play this game. Like, he may just need to sit out and like talk with a leader or just, you know, have a quiet moment. And those are both okay.
So what advice would you give to a youth pastor who maybe is, because I'll be honest, this is where I would fall in this category. What advice would you give a youth pastor that is hesitant in like, man, I don't want emotions to take over. You know what I mean? Like any of those.
We had a plan. I don't want the emotions to override the plan.
What encouragement would you give that youth pastor or advice?
Yeah.
And I know that that's really broad because we're talking about like multiple scenarios of camp and Wednesday night.
Mission trips and everybody has their own version of
but
camp.
But I think for many youth pastors, they understand that swinging of the pendulum, right? Yeah. Of almost not wanting fakeness to get in there, right?
Sure.
And so you guard against all of it. So what advice would you give that guy?
So I think one of the things that is probably important is the way in which you prep your leaders. Like if it all rides on you, you have to steamroll because you don't have the bandwidth to like take the aside to sit with a student. You need the team of your half dozen, 20, 30 leaders, whoever you have on your team to meet the needs of different students where they are. We talked about this a few episodes ago of how like the number one recruit for me would be to have the empathetic person that could see what I didn't see as I was having a tendency to steamroll. The thing that I would say is you've got to prep them more than just like what's going to happen at camp, but what could happen at camp. Some of that comes from experience. Some of them will have shared experience, wisdom for you from having gone to that camp before or having been connected with the church longer than you. If you're relatively new or you haven't experienced that camp situation. The other thing that I would share is that sometimes camp goes according to plan, even when it doesn't go according to schedule.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of folks, it was like, we just need to pound through the schedule. And it's like, dinner's at 7 and service is at 8.
Yeah.
And it's 8:15. I think I do have a mentor that would say that like, if it's of the Holy Spirit, sometimes it can wait. I don't think you have to stay up till 2 a.m. every night trying to sort out everybody's feelings because there are things related to emotions of tiredness, thirst, hunger, missing home. But I do think that like the game of camp was not just running the tight ship so that nothing ran late.
Yeah.
Like there may be a night where a student needs to sit out of an activity to call home and talk with a leader. There may be a small group that needs an extra 15 minutes to kind of sort things out before you scoop them back up to go to whatever is next that was fun or exciting. Like if they're late from small group to the ice cream fellowship at 10, it's okay. I think some of those kind of pastoral judgment calls, which I think the third thing I would say is you've got to be in a really centered place of confidence and anchoring to be able to kind of oversee it. If you're coming into camp frantic, you're so scattered or frenetic or running hard and heavy that you won't be sensitive enough or discerning enough. And so that's why, and you've shared before, you actually like taking vacation pre-camp, whatever it takes to refill the tank, the 3 to 5 days before you go, do it. If that means a little more legwork or that means letting one thing not get done that was a great idea that you had, if you show up the first day of camp and you're already run down to E, you've got nothing left to give your students or your leaders who will give that to students. And I think that's the thing that like, if it is a getaway, some of your students will be running on E, but you can't be.
Yeah.
Like this is your time to whatever it takes to be prayed up, filled up, hydrated, like all the things that you need for both your physical, spiritual, and emotional well-being, that you have something left to give.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of that. I think the week before camp for every youth pastor should be the most calming week of your year. And I'll stand by that.
You got to have something left to give.
Well, if you can't have everything done the week prior to camp being ready, then you just have the wrong deadline.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. All you got to do, pretend you're leaving that Saturday instead right. of the next.
It's the Monday before you leave for camp or Tuesday or whatever is pray week.
Yeah.
So everything's dead week is, yeah, this is before the final exam.
That should be your week of the finalizing those type of things.
Right.
Instead of, I'm trying to finish creating that game for Tuesday night.
Right,
like,
right.
The reality is you just didn't start. You should have started 1 week earlier.
That's it.
Like, of prep. Like, and I know that that's easier said than done. And I've definitely had those years where you're working up until
you had a last minute idea. Yeah. It was a big idea. It was super exciting. It's okay. Sometimes the editing process means that we don't do everything
right.
so that we can do a better job at the thing that we were trying to do.
I think us talking about our own emotional health going into camp is really, really thoughtful in helping students walk through an emotionally true experience.
Yeah.
Because if we're frantic, they're going to be frantic.
Of course, yeah.
And in the same way, like, I think it is wise to be able to judge, like, okay, is God doing something in this kid's life, or are they just tired? And realizing how to, like, minister and talk to them through that process when that kid's like, God just tell me that I need to break up with my girlfriend. And you're like, all right, well, maybe, but like,
hold on.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe you're just exhausted.
Okay. So that's the question I want to ask you. And I think this is something that, like, we're early enough now. This is April or May, if you're listening, that is getting ready for summer. How do you begin to prepare those that will receive them at home? So I know that for a lot of good youth ministers, they'll send out like a prayer package, a prayer list, insight to church members, other staff members, and parents that are at home. But what do you do when Johnny's like, I'm breaking up with my girlfriend and I'm going to quit basketball? Like, there's fallout from that. Yep. It may be right, maybe wrong, but how do you prep leaders and prep families at home that, like, they had the mountaintop experience for four days, they want to alter the trajectory of their life, and yet, like, mom and dad may want to weigh in on that. How do you relay that to home? How do you prepare a belay that for home in a way that, like, doesn't make people being like, I'm not going to send my kid to camp because when he comes home, he's got a new major every time.
I think the answer to that question is it depends on the size of your group, right?
Okay.
There are student ministries where you're going to know every one of your students.
Yeah.
You're going to know parents, some of the parents.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know how
Kathy and Tina and Tim are all going to react.
Yeah. I think part of partnership with parents is having that open dialogue. And so knowing that you had a conversation with Timmy at camp.
Yeah.
That, you know, he's wanting to quit band, that, you know, has been a big thing in his life or
it's
whatever.
It's kind of been a big deal for Tim and Diana and their whole family. Yeah.
And so being able to have a conversation on both ends, right?
Yeah.
Of coming back from camp and knowing, like, part of the to-do list is more than just cleaning out the trailer.
Yeah.
Of going, okay, there are follow-up things from camp that I need to take care of. We had these students come to know the Lord. These students want to be baptized.
Right.
These big decisions that we've heard about, talked about. And so I think following up with all of my small group leaders, hey, what were some of the things that you saw at camp? What are some of the conversations that continue in
maybe
ministry?
Even daily, having that clipboard running list of things like, that are kind of murking, walking through.
I think for a lot of student ministries, there's this feeling of we want to be big, we want to be big. I think for a lot of student ministries that aren't necessarily huge, you have an advantage that the huge ones don't and the opportunity to minister to every single student really well.
Yeah.
And I think it's back to that kind of like parable of the talents a little bit of like, are you ministering well to the ones that you have? And I think part of that is the opportunity to really push in to care for those families and to have individual conversations as a youth pastor that you can do when you have 60 students compared to 400.
Right.
I think that giving parents idea beforehand, hey, here are some of the big things that we're going to be talking about.
Let them know that some of the stuff may be stirred up.
Here are some of the directions that we're going at camp. These are what to expect. I'm a big proponent in having some dialogue that parents know coming after camp. I never wanted the image of my student ministry to only come through the mouth of a seventh grader because they're horrible at it.
Right.
Right? Because here's what's going to happen.
And then Roger broke his leg. Wait, what?
No, yeah, what was camp like? Yeah, so like think about it in this way.
It was sick.
You know the conversation that's going to happen when the kid gets back. And I think helping parents understand that beforehand, your
ask
kid
the better question.
Well, that, but also know your kid's going to come home tired.
Yeah.
Okay. So the immediate thing right as they get off the bus is not because a parent wants to know.
Tell me. Yeah.
How was camp? All of these kind of things.
I heard there was life change.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And it may have been a great week for that kid.
My dog. Yeah.
Yeah. He's exhausted.
Yeah.
And so knowing like, hey, here's how we can care for a kid when they get back from camp.
Yeah.
And I think that could
give them the 4-hour break of like a 2-hour nap, energy drink, and a little bit of food. Yeah.
And then
he'll rally by 9. Right. It'll be fine. Yeah.
And just to know, your kid's probably dehydrated. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
we did our best. They're still dehydrated. Yeah. We did our best,
yeah,
but they're still dehydrated.
But helping parents walk through that, have those conversations, I think are really, really good. Some of the great things I think during camp, if you're at a place that has cell service, is to set up ongoing communication at camp.
Yeah, I
think is really meaningful for parents.
Quick hits, either like a video or group text.
Quick video, all those kind of things that you can post on social media of, hey, here's what happened today.
Yeah.
Parents love to see
that up.
Photos.
Yeah. If there was ever a reason to live stream something in youth ministry, it is a moment from camp.
Yeah.
Because they again, you're there, they are here, and they want to be a part of what's there. Mm-hmm. And so if you can bring there to here, when you come home, you've closed the gap for how far away they felt from their kid.
They want to see their kid.
Yeah.
And so if you have people that are taking photos and posting photos that evening, every single night of camp.
Huge win.
If you want more parents to follow your email newsletter, your social media stuff.
Load it up with camp stuff.
Load it up with camp photos. And it's not just
in real time. One big one, like sprinkle it out.
Because they're going to be checking it.
Yeah.
And
they've got time now. Their kid is gone.
Right. And so those are great ways to connect with families.
That's good. Well, what are we missing? I think one of the things we talked about is that there's a range of emotions to hit. There's the ups, there's the downs, there's the sad, the grievances, the frustrations, the anger. What about when it is something new?
Mm.
When you are blindsided by the student, who you thought everything was okay.
Mm.
I think there's some of the things that we can't plan for. We talked about this, like, oh man, it's easy science, right? Like you just survey the land and you figure out how to build it. But that's not always the case. So Chad Higgins, like, what is the wisdom when it's something that you never saw coming? It's an issue, a struggle. Maybe it's a new student that camp was their first experience, which has got its own kind of unique entry point, that they would spend a whole week with you before they spend a Wednesday with you. But how do we do right when we couldn't have seen it coming?
Yeah. So you're talking about like experiences like kid shows up on Wednesday night and parents are getting divorced or
parents are getting divorced. Their brothers got arrested. Dad just got hauled off for selling drugs again. Like, I mean, I think we can all probably spot like this relationship was ending. This kid has really been wrestling with how much the sport has taken from their life. And so maybe it's a big decision, but that wasn't a surprising decision. How do we handle the thing that surprises us too?
Start with is, I try to, I always want to bring peace to situations like that.
Okay.
And so when a student brings an emotional thing, you can help in that situation by creating a base level of emotion.
And
we're talking about multiple scenarios here, right? And so, I mean, everything from brother got arrested or they got in trouble, right? Down to
camp became punishment for them, right? Like it's a weird
grandma died, right?
Yeah.
And so I think creating a space where they can talk about those things, where you're not shocked, is a really big deal.
Where you can actually have, again, some of that centering emotional health. You can respond, not react, right? Like, oh my God. Like, you just,
Because I think they, anytime you're in a conversation with folks, like, emotion is matched.
Okay.
And so
it rises and falls to the rest of the room.
Is either going to control that, or we can help them regulate
and navigate.
And navigate. And so I think helping create a conversation of peace, where even if they feel like their world is falling apart in that moment, like that we're kind of some stability there.
Okay.
I would also say for us in the realization that you can't fix everything. And I think I get in trouble a lot. Well, less so now, but earlier in marriage, of wanting to fix
the problem.
Like,
if you know the problem, I can figure out a solution. Let's figure it out. That just takes time and money. I got it.
I think maybe too quick we want to give kids, when it's like, you know, my parents are getting divorced, and it's like, well, you need to do this, this, and this. And I think sometimes, like, the reality of, at least in this first conversation, I just want to make sure that you feel heard.
Yeah.
That I am here with you, and it is okay to cry. And maybe that whole first conversation is just the opportunity to cry. And I think that for people, I think their view of church, and this is why we started what we did, if our student ministry is always just the hype, then when students internally aren't feeling the hype. And I'm not talking about their ministry. And that's what I want youth pastors to hear. I'm not talking about a kid that looks at your thing and goes, well, that isn't the coolest event. I'm talking about the other 90% of that kid's life that is just their life. When you're like, come to this awesome event, and all that kid's been thinking about is how much turmoil's in his house right now.
Right.
And so the big loud feels exhausting.
Right.
And I think,
shake hands with 15 people you've never met.
And I think having the emotional maturity for ourselves of realizing, man, for that kid that's been walking through that, sometimes the hype may be the escapism, and that's not good either. But I think that us creating a space and opportunity for conversation to just go, hey, man, it's okay. Like, I hear you. I love you. You know, and the Lord does. And there's hope in that. Even in the uncertainty of what tomorrow brings, there is the steadfastness that is God. And I think the opportunity for us to get to walk next to adolescents in the craziest time of their life emotionally, with puberty and everything, that even the smallest thing is blown out of proportion, to help them become adults that navigate emotions in a way that not everything that's hype is good. And not everything that is sorrowful is bad, is a really good place to allow them to engage God, because in the darkest times that we walk through, He is there. And in the greatest times, He is there. And both places are great opportunities for us to worship Him. And I think helping students understand that, just because they didn't have this, like, emotionally good feeling moment,
the warm fuzzy,
the warm fuzzies, doesn't mean that God wasn't present. But then also the maturity to know that, like, dude, Ocean's played 900 times, we'll elicit a response, and it may not have been God. And I think that that's good for us to know, that we are looking for an authentic relationship with Him in the good and the bad.